Yeah, for sure. I was Jenny's age when we started it. And the one recollection is it seems like starting a family foundation is easy and ending it is hard. And that's maybe a gauzy memory a little bit.
And Jenny, you are our representative today for Generation 3.
We call ourselves 3G.
3G.
The 3G network. Yeah.
Welcome to Giving Voices, stories told by and about philanthropists, where philanthropists and their advisors tell stories about how they influenced, experienced, and led through times of transition, where we celebrate and learn from that transition, that period where decisions are made, and where we always find a meaningful way to connect and foster community. I'm your host, Stephanie Borsari, and now for today's show.
Greetings, Giving Voices community. Today, I am delighted to have two guests with me. I have Tom Donnelly and Jenny Convey, who are trustees of a three-generation family foundation. It's been in existence for nearly 40 years. And just under 10 months ago, the trustees of the foundation decided to sunset and dissolve this foundation. And this is one of those things where we are right in the middle of all of this activity happening. And I am just so grateful, both Tom and Jenny, to both of you for joining me and for your willingness to share your experiences with the Donnelly Foundation. So by way of quick introduction, Tom Donnelly is the chairman of the Donnelly Foundation. He's been a trustee since its founding by his parents, Edward and Inez, in 1986, Tom?
Yes.
Yep. So he's Generation 2. And Tom has retired from a successful business career since 2018, and he now centers life in York County and the Poconos of Pennsylvania, staying very involved in the community and in Pennsylvania state organizations and with his family. Three children, all three of whom have served as trustees on the foundation. If I remember correctly, Tom is Jenny's uncle and godfather. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. And then Jenny Donnelly Convey, you have been a trustee of the Donnelly Foundation for 11 years and have been serving as the chair of the foundation's transition task force since late 2022. I know we've talked a lot about this, that you have professionally worked in fundraising as a nonprofit consultant. And then just yesterday we were talking about your master's degree in philanthropic studies. So Jenny's very well versed in the nonprofit and philanthropy space and demonstrates her passion for next gen philanthropy with her engagement in the next gen cohort of our local community foundation. And I know as the proud mother of two young guys, because we see them occasionally when we are on our Zoom. So thank you, Tom, Jenny, thank you so much for joining me, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's just give our listeners a little bit of background. We will talk, as we said, about the actual sunsetting activities, the dissolution, but let's give them a little bit of history. So Tom, I'm going to ask you, since you're one of the original trustees, your mom and dad started this foundation in 1986. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like during that time and how you felt being on the board and what the plans were?
Yeah, for sure. I was Jenny's age when we started it. And the one recollection is it seems like starting a family foundation is easy and ending it is hard. And that's maybe a gauzy memory a little bit, but all I had to do was go into my dad's office and sign these various notarized papers. So the lawyers did most of the work. And it's a good thing that it's hard to close a family foundation. We'll go into that in a little while. But it was a little misleading what I just said, because it really took the work of a lifetime for my parents to focus on really how they wanted to give their legacy, to make the money, because they were both very poor and had to struggle to get good education, and for them to be able to figure out that a family foundation made the most sense for them, for tax purposes, just for one thing, but also to organize their charitable giving and to get us involved, as my sister Martha and my John and I got involved right from the beginning. That's a little bit of the history.
What did they want to do with the foundation?
Well, I'll put it in a crass term first, that they had turned into a high income tax bracket. The taxes were high in the early 80s, mid 80s. So that was one way to shift money out of their estate. And then my dad, over the course of a 70-year career, which is crazy to me, He was the 11th employee of this startup company in 1943 and ended up being the chairman and the CEO of Air Products, which is a Fortune 200 company, and basically served as chairman emeritus until the end of his life. He was getting all sorts of contributions requests from Allentown and the Lehigh Valley. Their company did. It was a generous company. My dad and mom were very generous. She was a really active volunteer in the community, both in door-to-door things, fundraising, and also in community leadership, too. She chaired our public library board for 25 years. So because they had limited educations or had to really work hard to get their educations, and yet they had become successful, they wanted to try to nurture that in other people as well.
That's the first time I've heard all of that, Tom, despite how we've worked together. And I just have known the dates and sort of logistics. Thank you for going into more detail about what their work life and earlier days were. I didn't realize your dad had worked for 70 years. That's amazing.
Oh, he was kind of a goodwill ambassador. And yeah, he was retiring as the chairman and the CEO in 1986. He had turned 65. Younger than I am now, which is crazy thinking back on it. So he was planning his future as well. And the foundation was a big part of that.
So then you and your brother and your sister are original members. And then it comes time. So you're generation two. So then it comes time for generation three. And Jenny, you are our representative today for generation three.
Yes, we call ourselves 3G.
3G.
The 3G network. Yeah.
And there's three of you. No, there's four of you now. Silly me. There's four
on the board. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did that feel like for you to be joining the board? Were you the first of the?
I was in the first cohort. There were maybe four of us at that time as well who came on. Not the exact same four as are in the group now. But the first word that comes to mind is intimidating. I mean, it's our family members, you know, there's like a warmth and, you know, certainly a welcoming. No one was, you know, sitting at the end of a long board table, you know, I don't know, judging us or giving us stern looks or anything like that. It couldn't have been more welcoming. They chose to bring us on. But, you know, when you've had people who have been doing this since basically like the year I was born, and then suddenly you're joining the mix. And, you know, we were young. We were in our 20s, early 20s, the cohort that joined, and most of us hadn't served on a board before, certainly hadn't done formal philanthropy. So yeah, it was intimidating. I think it took most of us a while to sort of find our own voice and feel like we kind of understood the rhythm and the process, and we got there. I've been
you
on
certainly
the board
did.
For 11 years, I think now. So certainly that has shifted as you would expect. And now we're, our generation has been leading the charge in everything that we've been doing, and certainly this transition process of closing out and spending down right along with the 2Gs. So it's been a really interesting learning process. I've really learned a lot and found my voice, as your podcast title, Giving Voices.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you for that connection. And you've absolutely, for me, my experience in working with you is that you are very much a leader in the foundation, leading of the transition task force. I know you're the one who knows most of what is going on at any given point and are making some really key decisions representing the trustees in so doing. So that is definitely one of the things that has changed, I would suggest, from the early 80s when there were the two generations and a middle point that you've just described to now. Are there just quickly any other things, particularly Tom, that you would identify as being different now? What are your observations about the foundation and how it has been functioning since it was first established?
I'll say something and come back specifically to your point. I mean, our parents would be delighted with Jenny in particular and with every grandchild that served on the board. My dad gave an interview some years ago, and part of his words were, I would encourage the children and their children to design a blueprint that fits the needs of their time, not our time. So although their intent and our intent for many years was to continue in perpetuity, we were always open to the possibility that maybe we wouldn't be able to do that. And we were going back and looking at his words as we were trying to figure out where we go from here beginning last year. And that notion of, you know, we have a certain vision that my parents gave, but each generation has to pursue its own. But they were really happy to have us involved at my level, my brother and sister and I. And to me, it was a great adventure at that time. I get to, you know, work with my mom and dad and in a different relationship with them. And they were so happy when our grandkids were willing to serve. And that's been an amazing experience for me, to, as Jenny said, for the last decade, to be working shoulder to shoulder with her and my kids and some of our nephews on my sister's side of the family.
That was a lot of foresight that your dad had. I don't know how often I hear when a foundation is being created that the first generation and the founders are saying, and we want this to evolve and take on the voice and the perspective of our next generations. Often they're very specific about what it is they want to do, and that is it. That is the legacy. So you actually give us the opportunity to bring that point back around, Tom. And here we are. Here we are in the, you know, the tail end of the foundation's existence. We are, I'd like to sort of hear how the foundation trustees did decide to dissolve the foundation, with whatever you're comfortable sharing, what influences and factors came into play as two generations reflected on more than nearly two decades of philanthropy and made the decision to push all of the assets out now. What was going on during that time?
Yeah, I'll piggyback.
You want to start with Jenny? Good.
Yeah, off of something Tom just said, which was about the question of perpetuity, which, as Tom mentioned, was, you know, sort of in our charter and founding as the goal, the plan, with an understanding that my grandfather knew that, you know, he's one to have done his research. That was what he was all about. And he studied it, and he read about cases where the mission of a nonprofit or a foundation that had been set years and decades before was no longer relevant in the current world. You know, there was a case, I think it's in Pennsylvania, actually, where we're headquartered, where there was an organization that was set up for white orphan boys. And it was only supposed to be serving that population for perpetuity. And there obviously, as you can imagine, came a point where that was no longer, you know, an acceptable mission. It was, there no longer had even enough of that population to serve. And they had to figure out, is this whole legal battle about how can we continue, you know, with this organization, with the mission that's hamstringing us. And he knew about that. He researched when he founded the foundation, and he made it clear to us, even though he established the foundation, you know, with perpetuity in mind, that, you know, he knew that the foundation would need to evolve, based on the leaders and the current times. So we actually every 3 years, started having strategic planning retreats as part of sort of the foundation's next generation, next steps. And every retreat, we decided we would start with the question of perpetuity. Does that still make sense for us? What are issues that might question, you know, that as our goal, as our plan? And, you know, we had the first few strategic planning retreats and we said, yes, we still feel like that's our situation. And then I think just some things changed. I think timing was honestly one of the biggest pieces of this, just that we had staffing changes. We had board members who wanted to move on and do different things, you know, just family dynamics, a lot of things. And I think it just became clear to everybody going into our strategic planning retreat, which we had at the very beginning of this year, that I think just the tides had shifted on if this model was still working for us and for our grantees. And we spent 2 full days down in Florida at the strategic planning retreat, really hashing it out and thinking through all the possibilities. We did prep work beforehand. We had a facilitator, strategic planning guru, lead us through it. And we really kind of circled through every possibility. And we all came to a consensus that closing the foundation and sort of doing it in a timely manner was sort of what everybody came to an agreement on. And there were a lot of options thrown in there, which, you know, we might dive into. But yeah, so it's been a really interesting process. I've never, as I'm sure most people haven't experienced, you know, I think more people may have been like, oh, I have a cause, I'm going to jump into it, I'm going to help found it or help, you know, get it off the ground or contribute. But deciding to and then implementing the closing of an organization is really an important thing and something that happens, you know, all the time. But it's not something I've experienced before. And it's been really interesting to make sure to do it thoughtfully. And you know, all it's very detailed. And
well, I was going to, you said it, that it has been a very thoughtful process. Tom, how does it feel for you looking back? You've mentioned your folks being very proud of what the grandchildren have been doing. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly heard you voice that they'd be very proud of the decisions that have been made, even to dissolve and sunset. But how do you feel?
I'll give you my quick take on it. And my parents were both Depression kids. And like I said, they were very poor. And you know, my dad was the big picture visionary guy and had really strong people skills as well. But my mom was the hands-on, practical, you know, roll up your sleeves and get things done kind of a person. And I like to say that they had log cabin values. They were humble. They worked really hard. They had to. They had no other choice. And they always felt like family first, family together. And my dad actually lived in a log cabin during the Depression. His family had to move there and there were 8 kids. He was the oldest of 8. So there were his 2 parents and 8 kids, at least some of the time, living in this one room with a loft log cabin. So you talk like family together. They literally were family together on top of each other. And that log cabin still is today. We've donated that to a town out in Michigan. It's in the middle of their history park. And so it's kind of a family symbol.
And it's our foundation's logo as well. Yeah.
And Gavin Robb, another nephew, he's an architect. He designed the logo for us, which we think is really cool. And that's on our website, on the front page, and on our literature and things like that. So the family together thing, you know, over time, Jenny said it was somewhat intimidating coming on. It was starting to get heavy. It was you know, not an overwhelming amount of work, but a fair amount. And we were giving to charities in the communities in which basically my brother, sister, and I lived in. After my parents passed away, we decided to phase out of Allentown and the Lehigh Valley, Allentown, Pennsylvania. That had been the core of our giving. But pretty early on, we started giving in the communities that Martha, John, and I lived in as well. But then, you know, we're all different. We're all educated differently. We went to different parts of the country. 2 of the board members didn't live in the 3 cities that we lived in. And that became complicated. What are we going to do? Start giving in Atlanta, start giving in Boston. And yeah. Our executive director was very concerned about that. We were concerned about that. So different things, you know, different approaches, different backgrounds, different communities. It started to get heavy. And then, you know, there was not that there was huge family friction, but there was some. And people were leaving the board for whatever reasons. Their lives had changed or they felt like they were done with it. You know, I never wanted to do that. It's just, I've served on a lot of boards in my career, 30 some, and this has been the most amazing experience. So I was committed to seeing it through to the end. And then the big thing, Jenny, I think we'll agree, our executive director, our consultant, she felt like she had gotten to taken us as far as she could. And we were, COVID had taken place. We'd had to delay some retreats. We had some pressing things to do. This notion of do we just stay focused on our three communities? And so she gave us her notice in September of 2022. And that started this transition process that Jenny has referred to. It's like, are we really that dedicated when we've lost some board members already to go through this process again, hire a new executive director, delegate a lot? And that was part of the decision that Jenny described a little bit before, leading up over, you know, 6 months to this retreat we had in February of 2023 to decide to close out the foundation. You also realize how much work there is to run a foundation. So, you know, we're scrambling to get the accountants lined up, to get the IT people lined up, to do all sorts of things. That was a huge amount of work that Jenny jumped into, and a few of the rest of us were very active with, and the others obviously paying close attention to it.
I'll just is, we're recording now in December 2023. The recording for our guests is likely to be in early 2024. So I'm just making the point that this is a really compressed time, but not as compressed as if we were to say earlier this year and we're listening in February. So nonetheless, so just a quick time frame, end of 2022, the executive director resigns. Retreat happens in February 2023. We are now in December 2023. So just to give our listeners a sense of our time frame here. And now, Jenny, I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but please.
No, I was just going to say, I tend to think about it the way that both of us sort of just have in terms of just the specifics, our specific situation and, you know, staff and board and kind of what was going on with everybody specifically. COVID, all of that, but it's also something I look at sort of with my nonprofit consultant hat and my master's in philanthropy hat, just in that it's such a natural thing to me in the life cycle of an organization that this would be happening to us and that this is kind of the decision and the route we've chosen. There's something that's so common in all organizations was just founder syndrome. You know, my grandfather founded the organization. He was sort of the lifeblood of it. I'm sure Tom and my dad and my aunt would say that for a time they sort of just rubber stamped like what mm-hmm. he wanted to do. He was the head honcho. He was so sure. involved in philanthropy, so involved in his community. And you know, then we all wanted to be a part of it. When we signed on, we wanted to work with our grandfather and I think when my grandmother, and I think when she passed and then when he passed, you know, it's just, it, things change. It's different. And that happens in so many organizations when it's really all centered around the founder and how wonderful they are and what they're passionate about. And when they're such a strong leader as he was. So that, and then on the other side, just, I know as a consultant for nonprofits, we work with boards and we always recommend board terms, a very thought out plan of board succession. And we certainly did have a plan of board succession, but it was how do we onboard the next generation? I don't think there was ever a thought to offboarding and that whole process. And just Tom said he served on 30 boards and he's not currently serving on 30 boards as much as I'm sure each of those meant to him. He's got grandkids, he's got other stuff going on. But my point is, you're meant to ideally serve for a time and be so committed and bring your view and your perspective and your passion and your energy and your time, and then move on to something else. Not that there's things that you're not passionate about throughout your whole life, but that's just what we always recommend in the field is, you know, have people serve a term. They know what they're committing to. They can live up to that. If something changes in their life, you know, they can move on. They can sign a second term. But, you know, we're like the Supreme Court. We have lifetime terms as this family only board. So it's just people start resigning. Like people have kids and are retiring and trying to, you know, finally do other things with their lives. And so it just kind of, to me, was a natural progression of the life cycle of an organization and this organization specifically. So it all sort of makes sense to me at the same time.
Your next generation is very young. So it's not even like you could look at
our next generation. Yes,
right.
They are.
It's not like you could even look to them and say, well, in a couple of years, we'll start onboarding them. Because, I mean, I know your guys are really little.
Yeah, all of them are under 10. Yeah, nobody's even over 10 years old in our fourth generation.
No, so you're looking at a whole other decade and a half, perhaps, before you would be bringing
on
a new, really brand new blood.
Well, let me say, Stephanie, real quick, that, you know, we had a number of Maalox moments along the way, some friction in the family, you know, even before we decided to close out. And so it wasn't always smooth sailing. We were not perfect in any way. We made mistakes and people are going to do that. It's people, families can do that too. And again, we definitely did not want the foundation to get in the way of family togetherness. And one huge thing was, you know, we decided not to hire a new executive director, but we needed somebody to help us close this out. So you have done a tremendous job. It was so great to find you. And that's really important to foundations to be able to do that. So you've been putting 40, 50 hours a month, even more, into helping us to, you know, make this run smoothly. And it's all taken a lot of work on all of our parts, but that is hugely important to have good professionals and be willing to pay for them to make this stuff work. And I hope before we close, we think we've come up with an elegant solution that, you know, is a win-win-win for everybody. Should I quickly mention that?
Yeah, let me just put, first of all, thank you for everything you've just said. I'm very glad we're only on audio right now because I'm blushing beyond anything that's attractive. As framework, quickly, you all decided, this foundation decided to spend down very rapidly. We just gave the timeline. And I think that is somewhat unusual. In my experience, I have seen that decision made and then it can happen over a period of years with multi-year grants, usually larger, fewer grants. And that itself is a whole host of decisions, like who do we honor and give our big assets to in large chunks.
Or people that the funds are sort of just running out.
Yes.
That's what I see, you know, and in studying philanthropy in school, it's either this 25-year process where it's strategically been decided and you're going to spend down, you know, Atlantic Philanthropies comes to mind as an example of a spend down that is always looked at over 25 years, huge corpus, you know, very thoughtfully and long-term spend down, or it's, you know, we've run out of funds or we're getting there. The founder is gone and there's not going to be an influx again. And it's kind of a necessity. So I agree. I think it's, I do think this is unusual. I think it's either sort of one or the other typically.
Yeah. So Tom, why don't you then explain then, now that we've talked around it, how the foundation is going through its dissolution?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll say we had a little case study of our own that helped us figure out how to do this, because after mom and dad passed, we had to make a decision. Do we want the Allentown and the Lehigh Valley education and enrichment causes and things that help organizations that help people be successful up there? Did we want that to continue to be the core of what we were doing when none of us lived there? And they both had demonstrated and felt strongly that you should be hands-on. You can be writing a check to an organization, but you should know about it. If you can be involved in it, that would be great. Well, we were starting to give to 90, up to 90 organizations in the four communities in Allentown and the three that we lived in. So it was pretty hard for us to be real hands-on. But if none of us were in Allentown, we weren't going to know much about them at all. So that was a big retreat topic, and we decided to phase out of Allentown and Bethlehem, the Lehigh Valley, for over a 3-year process. So we took our time with that. And then we made a pretty significant gift to the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation so that our charities that we were supporting weren't going to be totally not have anything from us. So, and Jenny was really the champion of this. And I wanted to move faster. I'm thinking we should do this in 2 years. And Jenny was, you know, very purposeful. Let's do three. We've got to be very clearly communicating. We want everything to be transparent. And there was consensus around that, and it all worked out really well. So we had that, and then that helped us say, well, nothing's forever. And so we can get comfortable with this. And again, spending some months talking about this, we decided last February that we're going to give half the money away to our current grantees, the ones that over time have stayed with us. And we want to be supporting them and be very clear with them as we were in Allentown. And then we're going to give half to a charity or a donor advised fund that a member of the family, if they chose to participate, would want to give to. So that was beautiful that we didn't just stick to our trustees. We thought this is a whole family enterprise, whether somebody was on the board or not as a trustee. So that's worked out really well, where most of the family members have created a donor advised fund, or they've picked a charity that they really care about that they want to give to. So that gets us to the next generation in a big way, that this is, you know, the legacy at least is carrying on to the next generation, probably into perpetuity. It's just not the foundation. It's just not the old structure that we have that's going to do that.
We had our own case study that Tom just mentioned in closing out of the Allentown region. And we also, I would say two other things within the strategic planning process where we made this choice to close down and how we wanted to do it back in February. We also had studied case studies, which are honestly hard to come by. So I'm glad we're talking about this today, because I just don't think there are enough examples of how this does happen, how a family foundation might close down or go on to next steps. And we found as many case studies as we could, little articles or the website of a foundation similar to ours that had closed down. And we read about what they did. We talked about them in small groups in our retreat. We really sort of used those to guide us and what does make sense for us, what doesn't. How did this foundation maybe do both, give both to grantees and give family a chance to have some, you know, role going forward? So that was really helpful. We are doing this quickly, but we did really think through it and do our research. And then I'd say the other thing that I felt like was sort of a good example for us was that during COVID, we made the decision to give extra funds, no restrictions, general operating, which was not always, you know, how we gave to every single grantee in our portfolio. And we decided that in like 2 days when COVID was happening, which we weren't usually that nimble of an organization, as most foundations really aren't traditionally. And I think that was new for us. Everyone supported it wholeheartedly, but it was different. I think we all felt pretty good about it and just getting the money out there and doing something on a faster timeline and knowing that folks needed the money now. And I think it sort of exercised our muscle to do something different. And, you know, just that philanthropy doesn't always have to be so, you know, long term, so slow. So, you know, small increments, we give this grant amount every year and we, you know, we only spend 5% every year as we're legally required. And we sort of have our endowment and are always worried about, you know, how much we're keeping in a fund. So I think that was instrumental, I would say, too. And our grantees,
all of these experiences have come together to inform how you did it.
Yeah. And the way the grantees responded to that, too, I think really resonated. They were so thrilled and grateful. And yeah, that they really needed that support at that time. And I think that stuck with us as, you know, a year or two later, we were going through this process.
Well, you all got really wonderful responses, even when we announced that the foundation was dissolving. I mean, the letters and emails that came back from the grantees were really supportive and grateful and lovely and kind of emotional, some of them. So it's been, and you're putting out a lot of money. I mean, these are... as you pointed out, Jenny, this is a fully funded foundation that is still full with its assets. So the grant sizes that are going out are, you know, 7 to 10 times the amount of the annual funds. So it's a big, big undertaking. Let's wrap here. I had so many questions I wanted to ask you that you have just beautifully blended into everything that you all have said. But as you each look ahead and you now are stewarding your own family shares of the foundation, and I know each of you are involved in philanthropy already outside of the foundation, I'm going to ask each of you to respond to what is your wish for the social sector? And whoever has a response first, feel free to jump in.
I could go. I mean, I think I just wish there was less red tape in the sector. You know, I've worked in-house at nonprofits and as a consultant, and on the other side as a board member of a foundation. And I just wish there was, you know, less that grantees had to go through and grant reports and all the bureaucracy, and more sort of trust-based philanthropy, which is something we've talked about a lot as a foundation in recent years. And also, I think just having studied the social sector internationally, in my master's program, I wish that sometimes in our country, the social sector wasn't so focused on basic needs. Not that it doesn't focus on other things, but, you know, I think we're feeding people, we're sheltering people in this sector, we're educating people. And in other countries, for instance, they more use their social sector to do sort of arts and things that add to the social fabric of life. And, you know, I just wish that everyone had their basic needs met. And I think, you know, maybe one day we'll be even more well-resourced and well-funded and help more people.
And I'll say, Stephanie, that, again, the role of professional support for any charitable organization is so important. We talked about you as kind of our operations supporter as we go through the transition, with a huge background in philanthropy, but our consultants, our charitable consultants have been very important to us. We didn't mention a strategic planning consultant that we've used over the years, Jeff Glabocki, who helped us find you, but people like that are hugely important. And as important as anybody are the investment advisors. And we've worked hard at that over the years. We changed one at one point. We had a very deliberative process to do that. And they became very close to us, understood what we were trying to do, and helped make sure we were going to be growing in terms of the investments that they had. So that's one point I'm mentioning, that that's sort of the head side of it, that we've got to be, you know, really purposeful. Any organization has to be able to do that as they carry forward. I want to talk real quick about the heart part of it and give my dad, I'll say the second last word here. He was quoted as saying in this interview a few years ago, now about 6-7 years ago, I think we have gotten the most satisfaction from the realization that the things we have done have turned out successfully. There's a certain amount of luck in that. It isn't just wisdom. Luck counts for a lot. There was luck in my life and in Inez's life as well. Inez being my mom. So acknowledging that luck and humility and also joy. I wish for the organizations that we're supporting they have a big task and the needs are great out there. But what a blessing to be able to work in these fields that you're motivated to work in and to help people, assist people realize better lives. It's really an incredible thing. And so my hope is that they continue to go. There was a business book by a guy named Jim Collins, Good to Great. You know, you've heard of it and it becomes almost a cliche. The book was long. I read it, but then there was a pamphlet called Good to Great in the social sector. So that's what you were asking about, Stephanie. And that's my wish for the social sector, that they use their hearts and their heads to be able to fulfill their mission and have joy and bring joy in doing that.
Thank you both. That was such a, both from both of you, beautiful summary. And you, I'll paraphrase you, Tom, you both bring so much heart and intellect to this process. It's been a joy to be working with you throughout it, and an absolute joy this section together, just this time stepping outside of the work and sharing thoughts. And I really, really appreciate you kind of quote going there with me and giving your voice to the ongoing conversations about philanthropy. And I really thank you both.
Thank you for listening to Giving Voices and for being part of our community. If you have a story you'd like to share, or you'd just like to geek out about philanthropy together, reach out to me at hello@givingvoicespodcast.com. I can't wait to talk with you.